Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson, and it is January 11th. We're moving on to 2017. So today, sit back. We're going to really enjoy this interview. I'm going to be interviewing Isabel. Now, Isabel, I love her to death. And Isabel, how long have you been coming to our church?
Since 2011.
How long ago? Wow, 5 years ago.
Yes.
My goodness. Okay, so we're going to set this interview up instead. And let me be the first one. Today, January 11th, is Isabel's birthday. So she came in on her birthday. So happy birthday. And you're 56.
Yes.
Right. Which I am going to be 55 this year. So I'm a year younger than you. Is it hard to realize that we're aging?
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to believe that, oh my goodness, I'm in my mid-50s.
Yes.
So, and then for me, it's like I'm 5 years from 60. So it's just depressing sometimes of aging. But we won't talk about that. So tell us how you received Jesus in your life. Were you accepted it? How old you were? Tell us about that.
I was going to church with my aunt, because I was with my aunt when I came to visit to the States. And okay. She was Christian. And I was told that I needed to get saved so my whole family would be safe.
Oh, really?
So they wouldn't go to hell. So I...
Well, that's a lot of pressure.
Yes.
So basically they said, you've got to accept Jesus. If not, your whole family's going to hell?
And me. We all go to hell. Yes.
Oh, jeez. Oh, good. That's an incentive.
Yeah. So I did enjoy going to church and, you know, and participating on their right. events and... And then when I was 15, so actually I was baptized and I accepted the Lord.
Okay, you were baptized and accepted yes. the Lord. What kind of church was this? Do you remember?
It was a Christian church, okay. evangelical church in somewhere near Echo Park.
Okay, so you received Christ at a young age when you were a teenager. So Basically, Isabel is just having this normal life, normal teenage life. And then you graduated from high school.
Yes.
Okay. And so tell us when you met your husband, how you met your husband.
I met my husband at work.
Okay.
Yes, we didn't like each other. I didn't like him. Because I was a Dodgers fan and he was a Yankees fan.
So, oh, really? Yes. You know, that's a lot like my wife. I mean, it's like you like people on sports. So you were a Dodger fan.
Yes.
And he was a Yankee. Yes. That's funny.
Yes, we met through work.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you convert him to be a Dodger fan?
No.
And did he convert you to be a Yankee fan?
No.
Okay. So you got married and you lived with your differences when it came to sports.
Yes.
So was marriage healthy or was it good at the beginning?
Marriage was good at the beginning.
Okay.
Then he enlisted into the service.
Okay.
This is before our anniversary. Because things were falling apart. I found out that he was doing drugs.
Okay.
So he decided to join the service.
Do you remember what year this was?
This was in 1983, yes.
So he was in drugs, so he joined the service a year before you guys were married.
A year after you were married,
okay.
Because things weren't working that good.
Okay, so he went off to the military for a while. Did he end up getting off drugs?
No, he went to boot camp.
Okay.
Well, I assumed that, you know, that he was going to... you know, quit drugs because he was in the service. So he went to drugs. So he joined the National Guard. He just went to boot camp for the 6 months, I think, or two. But he came back home, started a job here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Things were, you know, good and bad, good and bad. So I try to hold on to the relationship to make sure, you know, because I hate failure. So yeah. I try to hang on to that.
So you try to make this work. And he was in drugs. Now, were you pregnant then, or...?
That's when I found out. I was pregnant, and after he came back from boot camp, I got pregnant in November 1983. So my daughter was born August 19, 1984.
Okay.
So when I was, like, about 4 months pregnant, he was arrested.
Oh, who was he?
Because he was catching checks from the National Guard, from the other soldiers.
Okay, so you got arrested for that.
Yes.
So now you are, your husband gets arrested, which is a shock.
I found out he was doing drugs.
You had a small little baby with you.
No, then I found that I was pregnant.
Oh, you were pregnant.
After he was arrested, he was doing drugs.
And you were pregnant.
And then after that, you know, I was feeling good, so I went to the doctor and I found that I was pregnant.
Oh.
And I just he was doing cocaine, so I just thought I had to get rid of my baby if something was wrong. So I went to the doctor, my gynecologist, and we talked about it, you know, what he was doing.
Right.
And then he talked to us, and he said if I did any drugs, I don't do any drugs.
Right.
So he said it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay.
To have, you know, to keep the baby.
To
but
keep
it was
the baby.
It was a very tough situation
okay.
there.
So you decided to keep the baby.
Yes.
So she was born, what's your daughter's name?
My daughter's name is Janine Isabel.
Okay, Janine Isabel, and she was born in
1984.
And so therefore, it's a shock to the system that basically you have a brand new baby and your husband is arrested doing drugs. And so it must have been hard, you know, with what's going on to say, look, I'm a single mother now. I don't have the strength to deal with this. How did you get the strength? How did you decide to say, you know what, I need to be strong for my daughter? Or where did you get your strength from?
I just kept on having faith in God and,
okay.
and in, you know, and knowing that I need to be strong for my daughter.
Right,
for my
right.
daughter's sake. I just needed to, I knew
right.
it was my responsibility. I just needed to keep on going.
Okay.
It was tough.
Of course it was tough. And so did he eventually come back?
Yes, he came back, you know, well, he didn't go to jail for them, you know, I think for, it was like 6 months.
Okay.
So, you know, then I went through with my pregnancy, I had the baby, we were going on back and forth, you know,
mm-hmm.
I figured, you know, this marriage is not going to fail, I'm going to try to keep it together as
okay.
long as I can, because I don't want my daughter to grow up without a father.
Right.
So, he came out, had jobs.
Okay.
3-4 months, then off, you know.
Was the relationship abusive?
No. He was never abusive.
So he was not abusive,
never
just
abusive
to himself when it came to drugs.
Yes, but he would steal money. When it came to the point where, when he got really bad is when he started to steal money from, steal checks from between my checkbooks.
Oh, really?
And then steal items from the house.
Okay.
Because when he lost his job, you know, he would take items so he can sell, so he can buy his drugs.
Okay. So when do you get to the point where this is enough?
It was one Saturday morning. I had already, we got up early, you know, we had breakfast with the baby. He, you know, we had breakfast. So he was watching the baby while I was straightening up, you know, the laundry and in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard him screaming at the baby. And when I peeked, he was shaking the baby.
Okay.
Because the baby had changed the channel and he was watching sports.
Oh, wow.
So right there and there, I said, this is enough.
Because that shaking the baby can cause a lot
right.
of damage.
Yes, she was a toddler. She was like about 1 year and 2 months.
Okay, so you just, so I'm assuming you ran in the room.
Yes.
Grabbed the baby and said, okay, this is done.
Yes.
And so, did you ask him to leave or did he just?
Oh, yes, okay. I asked him to leave and I snatched all the clothes out of the closet and threw it in the yard and said, you're out of here.
Okay, you're out of here. So he's gone. So
he's
now
gone.
It's just you.
And my daughter.
And your daughter.
Yes, and trying to put a nice phase that, you know, that, hey, you know, I got it all together,
right.
and, you know, now I'm a single mom and trying to deal with the judgment with my dad.
Oh, the judgment of your dad.
Yeah.
See, I don't think a lot of people understand back in the 1980s, and including now, that the shame that people shame us, especially family members, when we leave our husbands because of abusiveness
mm-hmm.
to our children. Or we're a single mother. And so your dad ended up shaming you a lot.
Oh, yes.
And so
the first thing out of his mouth, what did you do?
Oh, like it was your fault.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so he was never the type of dad was loving or caring or...
To some extent, he was loving, but he didn't... He had a weird way of showing it.
Okay.
He would boast about me with his friends, but
right.
never tell me directly he was proud of me.
Yeah, you know, I have a dad just like that too. that basically they'll say, or my dad, how the compliments will go, he'll say, hey, I told so and so about you,
mm-hmm.
and then stuff like that, but never directly. It's just me. I think it's that generation.
Yes.
I have no idea.
Yes.
But anyway, so you grew up being a single mother.
Yes.
And but you ended up making some good choices when it came to career-wise, decision-wise. I mean, you were making money to at least survive, correct?
Yes, yes. I have been blessed. God had never left me. He's always, has never left. He has always helped me to provide for my daughter and myself.
Yeah.
I have been working for, I think this year's going to be 38 years since I started working at the job. I was, before I graduated from high school, I started working at Carter Engineering, which was the customer, that company is no longer going, but then that company was sold to the company that I presently work now.
Okay.
But yes, it was not a glamorous life.
Right.
But it was, the Lord always provided for
me. Right, it was stable.
Yes.
It was stable. And right then you were probably needing stability.
Yes.
You know, then glamorous.
Yes.
And so let's speed up a little. So your daughter went through junior high, high school, graduated from high school.
Yes, went to college, fashion, it's here. It was here in Culver City.
Okay, so it seemed like there were some decisions that were just going, hey, you know what? And when she was going to college, did you ever feel like, I did it.
Yes.
I did it.
Yes.
I now I can not live stressed. Now I can just live for me, right?
Right.
And
well, no, not really. Not okay. Really. I just knew that I needed to make sure that she graduated from college, which she didn't.
Okay.
She barely finished the first year.
Okay. What happened?
She just didn't want to go to school anymore.
Okay. And so, and then she ended up dating.
She started working.
Okay.
And then during her job, she was working at the Marriott, and she was a hostess for the sports bar.
Okay.
That's where she met the baby's father.
Okay, the baby's father.
Yes.
So to understand the baby's father, so she ended up being pregnant.
Yes, she moved out. And then she became pregnant.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, was that a shock to you?
Her moving out, yeah. Yes. Yes.
And becoming pregnant, or you just figured that was?
I figured that would eventually, even though I talked with her and him before before that happened, and I told her I was not happy with the relationship. That was a bad choice.
Okay.
Because this person had already been incarcerated.
Oh, right.
And that she was always going to be the provider for the household, and she needed to make sure that she, not to have a baby until she was financially stable.
Okay, so you made that clear to her, and
yes.
then she became pregnant.
She still went ahead and became pregnant.
Okay,
yes.
So how does a mother respond to, I tried to do all the warning, I tried to say all this, and then all of a sudden, how did you find out she was pregnant?
She told me.
Okay.
She told me herself
and
she was pregnant.
And obviously you were surprised or not surprised?
I was surprised. I was very disappointed.
Okay.
I was very concerned about what type of life the grandbaby was going to have.
Right.
Because this is an unstable relationship.
Right, right.
Where she's the sole provider.
So your granddaughter was born. When was your granddaughter born?
My granddaughter was born on July 20th. 2005.
Okay, 2005.
Yes.
So it would be 11 years ago.
Yes.
Right, 11 years ago. Yes. And she would be 11 years old.
She's 11 years old. She would be 12 years this year.
Okay, 12 years this year.
Yes.
So then the relationship with the father of the baby.
The relationship with the father, she was, he was not a nice person. He would always belittle her and mistreat her, verbally abuse her.
Okay.
And she was always a provider, so if she's a good worker, when he saw that she was excelling at a job, that she was going to get a promotion,
mm-hmm.
he would, like, make sure that she quit. If somebody liked her, he thought that somebody liked her at work, he would drop her off and pick her up, he would make her quit the job.
Yeah. Do you ever I've always wondered this, why do people stay with these people? Do you wonder that, or do you know that?
For me, when I stayed in my bad relationship, I stayed because I hated failure. With my daughter, I don't think that she felt that she wanted to keep a family together.
Okay.
That's what she said. She always wanted, because she grew up without a father.
Okay.
With her is that she wanted to make sure that her daughter grew
up
with a family. Yes.
Okay, had a father.
Yes.
Which I could understand that.
Right.
I could understand that you didn't have a father. You wanted to provide a father. But that relationship didn't work, did it?
No, they stayed together. They eventually moved in with me.
Okay.
And they stayed together. Then he went back to prison when he was in when Mia was a year old.
Okay.
Then he came back when she he came out. Well, they lived with me, and then he was arrested shortly. And then the baby and my daughter lived with me, and then he came out like when she, I think she was 3, or she had just turned 4, that they didn't get back together.
So he was incarcerated for at least a year and a half to two years.
I think 2 years.
Without seeing his daughter.
Oh, no, they would visit her every... They would visit him every week. Oh, yes. Okay. She would make sure that they would go see him.
Okay. And so after they broke up, did he still continue to see...
No, it was on and off. She, when he came out, she asked him for help to take care of the baby because she was working.
Okay.
And she was dating this other person, which I didn't know.
Right.
So he said, you know, he would sometimes pick her up, or sometimes she would drop her off. And then one time he had agreed to take care of the baby for her and drop her off at school, and then she would pick her up on the weekends.
Right.
But he couldn't keep her that long. Because he was living with his mom.
Right.
So he just brought the baby back home.
Okay.
So then at that time, my daughter was, you know, living on and off at home, but the baby stayed with me.
Right. So you were building so the only foundational, I should say not a foundation, the only solid foundation that your granddaughter had at that time was you.
Yes.
You know, a consistent foundation.
Yes.
And so obviously as a grandmother, you gloated over this, I would assume, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
It's
2:30. So, okay, so when we understand the gloating and understand that you had this incredible relationship, then she began dating again.
Yes.
And so tell me about that relationship.
Well, I didn't know she was dating. She was telling me that she had a job, she had to work at night.
Uh-huh.
Until one day my neighbors told me, there's a guy that comes into your house when you leave. When you go to work, he comes right after.
Okay.
So one day I get ready, you know, pretend I went to work.
Right.
And I come in, and sure enough, I parked across the street where I could see, because I asked my daughter, and she said no.
Oh, so you were like a private investigator
right.
now.
Yes.
At your own house.
You know, and so I waited, and I saw that he was coming into my house. So when I knocked on the door, my daughter was like, pale. What are you doing? I said, bring the guy out. You know, I know he's here, bring him out. And she had hid him in her room. And when I met him and I looked at him, I didn't like what I see. You know, you can tell how...
So there was like, you were telling me previous that there's a darkness about
him. Yes,
yes. That was just nuts. Okay. So the thing is, so your gut feeling about him was what?
It's not a good person.
It's not a good person.
Not a good person. Okay. And I told him, I don't care what happens between you and my daughter, but don't ever hurt my granddaughter.
Okay.
So, he said, your granddaughter likes me. She likes you. She's only 3 years old.
Okay.
Of course she's going to like you.
Right. So basically he reassured you that I'm going to be good to your granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be this to your granddaughter. And you made it clear.
I made it clear that he was not allowed in my house.
Okay.
There's no men allowed in my house, not unless they're married to my daughter or married to me. So I told him, you're not welcome in this house, especially when I'm not here.
Okay, did they honor that then?
No.
No, they didn't like that. No. So they, in a sense, totally disrespected you.
Yes.
So in a sense, were you sensing this relationship was going on, but were you sensing some abuse going on too?
I didn't know. I, at that time, I didn't.
Okay.
But after Mia passed, I did.
Okay.
One day when I picked up the baby, they came over and my daughter was crying that she was done. She was going to leave him.
Okay.
So I kept the baby with me and we went to my sister's.
Was she going
to
leave him because she was being abused or?
Because she couldn't take it anymore. She never acknowledged to me that he was being abusive.
Okay, but she was done.
Yes.
And so you watched Mia for a while.
Yes. No, she stayed home. When she was in this relationship, she was out. You know, she would go to work, and she would either if she spent the night out. The baby will always stay with me.
Okay.
She would spend the night. I told her, I don't care what you do with your life. Just keep the baby here for her to be safe.
Right.
So then I think in 2010, so she lost her job. And then she was living in a motel.
Okay.
I found this out. This was about May.
Okay.
May, June. May.
Okay, May.
So she was living in a motel around the corner from my house. So one day, that's when she came over and she said she was done living with the guy, that she was going to leave the guy and that she was going to pick up her stuff on the following day. So I left her home. In the evening. She was having a migraine. So I went to my sister's house, and she had a little party. So we stayed there, and the baby and I went. So when we came back home, I was bathing the baby, and I noticed a bruise on her bottom.
Of the baby.
Yes.
Okay.
And I asked, "What happened to you?" And she says, "Don't tell my mommy, but Solo hit me."
Okay. And how old was she?
She was 4 years old.
So it's interesting that a four-year-old will know how to protect, mm-hmm. or try to protect. Because she made it clear, don't tell mommy.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming that wasn't the case that you...
Right.
So you did...
Yes, when we got home, my daughter was gone.
Okay.
So the next morning, I talked to my daughter. When she picked her up, I said, "I want to talk to you."
Okay.
"What happened to the baby?" She said, "Ask her, she'll tell you." And I said, "No, I don't want to ask her. You tell me what happened to the baby."
Uh-huh.
So she said she got spanked because she was spanked on her bottom because she was going to cross across the street in a very busy street and she could have gotten hit by a car. I said, "I understand to spank her, but to leave a bruise on her bottom?
Right.
I mean, that's not right."
Yeah, it's a little extreme.
Right. And I say, who gave him the right to hit the baby? Even him or you or nobody has the right to hit a baby that hard.
Right.
She was 4 years and what, months? What?
So just a little over 4 years.
Yes, over 4 years. So anyway, so my daughter went, she took off, and she was going to go to school, and, right. and then it didn't click in my head until she was going to leave the baby with him. Right. So what I did is I called her back, said, "I'll take the baby, and I want to talk to him." So, you know, so we met mm-hmm. right when by the place where they lived. So I wanted to talk to him, and when he came out of the car, he started cursing and all this stuff.
At you?
Yes. Calling me all sorts of names, so I lost it and I got into a fist fight with him.
Okay, so what was he yelling at you for? Because you wanted to talk to him, right?
Yes, because I told him how dare him hit my granddaughter.
Oh, and then instead of being repentiveness or saying, "I'm sorry, you're right, I need to get mm-hmm. help," he started welling on you mm-hmm. verbally.
Yes.
Oh, no, and physically.
No, well, he didn't hit me. I hit him
you
first.
Hit him
yes,
first.
Because he was cursing me out.
Okay,
yes.
So you just... And, you, yes. you know, if you're listening to podcasts, you're not a tall person. So basically, it's almost like, if you mess with my daughter, if you mess with my granddaughter, it's over
yes.
with you.
Yes.
And basically, you're going to start swinging.
And I warned him. I didn't want to swing. Yeah. But he started cursing at me, and I was so angry to think, why would he hurt a little baby, you know, the way that he hurt her? Because,
right.
I mean, to leave a bruise on the baby's bottom... He had to have hit her really hard.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So tell us the day that just tore you upside down, that day. Let's go through that day.
That was on September 16, 2010.
So we're only talking about just a little over 6 years ago.
Yes.
Okay. So so tell me of that terrible day in September, how it began first with you?
It was just a normal day.
Okay.
Went off to work, and while I was at work, I received a phone call from the police department. Because I was moving around in my where I work.
Okay.
They couldn't find me, so finally
okay.
the operator paged me, and I had to answer the phone. So it was Inglewood Police.
The Inglewood, okay.
Calling me, they said that I needed to get down to Sentinel Hospital.
They didn't tell you why.
They didn't tell me why. So in my mind, I thought, okay, my daughter must have gotten into a car accident.
Right.
I need to go pick up the baby.
Yeah.
So I was carpooling, so I had to call different friends at work, and I had to tell my friends, I need a ride to go back to Inglewood.
It's like a panic.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my coworker decided to leave early with me, and
okay.
she took me to the Sentinel Hospital.
Okay.
And she dropped me off, and I say who I am, so they took me into the other side of the emergency,
mm-hmm.
and I said, I'm here because my daughter is here.
Right.
I received a phone call. So when I go to this room, my daughter is there, and there's a crib. I said, where's the baby? And the first thing that my daughter says, I don't have a baby anymore. And then I learned that that my granddaughter had been murdered.
Okay, so your granddaughter was murdered. And so all of a sudden, one day you're at work, one phone call, you race to the hospital, and her life is gone.
Yes.
And so what happened?
My daughter was at work, and he was angry at the baby because the baby urinated on herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then all we know is that he brutally murdered, he hit her.
He hit her so much.
Yes, and he burned her, and he put her in the bath, and in the paramedics went and picked her up, and by the time they got there, she was already dead.
Okay. So you're going through this deep darkness right now, and so let me ask this. In the midst of shock, who are you mad at right now? I mean, what are you focused on? Are you furious at God? Are you furious at what is going on?
I couldn't believe what had happened. I thought it was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And all I could do was get on my knees and ask God for mercy. Because my hope was, okay, she's still, you know, we still can save her. You know, that I figured she was on missions. They never allowed us to see her.
You were never allowed to see her.
Never.
After she passed.
Never. And I even asked, can we give her... I was speaking everything that I was doing. I don't know how I did everything that I said. I was even asking, we don't need her organs for another child. And then I figured, you know, I'm the grandmother, I have no rights.
Right, right.
So they said, no. So everything from that day, I don't know how I functioned.
All right. So she was in a point so beaten up that there's no organs that they could donate.
Yes. Right? Yes, she was brutally murdered. Her scalp was detached from her head, her cranium. She was burned with water and with a blow dryer.
Okay.
Yes, she was burned on her arms.
Okay. So then it doesn't stop there, does it?
No.
Because then...
That same day, they told us we had to go to the police department.
Right.
So we went to the police department, and they wanted to talk to my daughter. And then the next day, we had to go again.
Okay.
And then we had to make all the preparations. And the next day we had to tell, because we got home so late, we had to tell her father that the baby had been murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And all the preparations and trying to get her body. And then her father didn't want us to have her body, didn't want us to go to the funeral. It was just so crazy.
So
yes, yes.
So they were investigating your daughter.
Yes, they were investigating my daughter.
And then what was the conclusion of that investigation?
The day after we buried Mia Amor, we buried her on September the 28th.
Okay.
And Saturday, the next day, September the 29th, they came and arrested my daughter to my house.
So not only did you lost your granddaughter to this brutal murder... That you were trying to say, you know what, we've got to do, because you saw it. You saw what was going on.
Yes.
You could read what's going on. And so now your daughter's arrested for what?
For the death of the baby, because she left the baby with the person that murdered the baby.
Okay. And so she was arrested for manslaughter or murder?
She was for... child neglect with result of death. And the reason why this was, when that incident happened, when I had a fight with the boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
I called a lawyer because I was trying to protect the baby.
Right.
You know, trying to have custody of the baby for temporary.
Right. Yeah.
And he says, you don't have any rights, you're a grandmother.
Okay.
This is an uphill battle and you're not going to win. We're just going to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
So then I had no choice but to call Child Protective Services on my daughter.
Okay. Which was the right thing to do.
Right.
So because of you trying to save and see what's going on, they've used that in a sense
They used against to give my daughter. Yes.
So if you're trying to save your granddaughter,
yes,
which didn't work, now they use that against your daughter, so she's arrested.
Yes.
Okay. And so she had to go to court, or she was pending court.
Yes.
Now, in the meantime, we didn't get into this. You were battling cancer as well.
Yes, I had to finish my treatment when Mia was born in July. So in October 2005, I had my surgery.
Okay, what type of cancer did you
have? I had breast cancer.
Okay, breast cancer. So you had the surgery. The thing is, and they removed it. And you, did yes. you go through chemotherapy as
yes,
well?
I had 16 rounds of chemo okay. and 28 rounds of radiation.
Okay, so you had this huge battle with cancer yes. in the midst of trying to fight for your granddaughter. Then the granddaughter was killed, and now your daughter's, and you still have, are you in remission then?
Yes.
Okay, so you're in remission. And so tell us about how what was going on when your daughter was in prison? What they were charging? Did she stay in prison?
We went to court for 4 years and 6 months.
Okay, so she was looking at life.
Yes, they wanted to give to charge her with 10 years to life.
10 years to life. Now this is interesting because you were in line waiting to visit your daughter in prison.
Yes.
And you bumped into a little angel.
Named, yes.
And who is that angel?
Eva.
Okay. Yes. Tell us about that. So now you're in despair. You're in line to see your daughter yes. and stuff like that. Tell us about this dialogue.
This was late May 2011.
Okay.
I was waiting for my daughter on my way to see her. I was praying to God that I wanted to find somebody to pray for me, a church and a pastor that then I can talk to, they can pray for me. Because I had been church hopping. Right. When my grandmother was alive, we were going to Catholic church.
Right.
So then after this happened, I was jumping from Catholic church to Christian church. And so when I get to the court, to the jail, I'm sitting down and this lovely lady, older lady comes up and she asked me, would you like to pray? And then when she asked me that, I just lost it. So she prayed for me. And because I lost it, they took me to the office.
Because you lost it.
Yes, mostly. I was just crying. Yeah. Because it was an answered prayer.
Right.
So then they took me to the office and a younger woman was there, which is Eva. She volunteers. And they both prayed for me. And what was so ironic is that Eva knew about my granddaughter. She had heard the case.
Oh, okay. So she knew about it.
Yes. And she told me, this was Saturday morning. So she gave me her phone number and she told me about this church.
Right. Now, Eva has not had an easy life either.
No, she has not.
Because her son has been in prison.
Yes.
And she's raising her son's children.
Yes.
And, you know, it's nice of you to say she's young, but she's our age.
Yes.
And so now she is raising two children. How yes. old are they?
I think the baby is going to be 4.
Okay.
No, 3.
3 years old. So in your 50s, to start yes. raising a 3-year-old, and your own son's in prison. Eva has her own incredible story, and yes. hopefully we can interview her in the future. So she invited you to
yes.
church.
Yes, she gave me her phone number, which was very nice of her, and then she invited me to church. This was Saturday, Sunday morning, I came to church.
Okay.
I was in Marina.
Okay, within 1 week, less than a
no,
week.
No, that's the next day.
Okay, so was it on the Sunday service?
Yes.
So you came on the Sunday service.
Yes, the 9 a.m. service.
Okay, so I have no idea what you're going to say. So how was that first experience?
Oh, my God. My first step crossing the door. Excuse me.
It's okay.
It was like God was waiting for me to embrace me. I felt this is a lovely warmth that wrapped around my body.
Wow. When you walked in the sanctuary.
Once I crossed the doorway, that was the most beautiful feeling. It was just like, God said, I'll be here waiting for you.
Wow. So to make it clear, when you came in the church, it was like God saying, I've been waiting for you.
Yes.
And so, which is powerful because Now, is this when you called me and to make an appointment?
Well, that was Sunday. No.
Okay.
I learned that you had prayers on Thursdays.
Okay.
So I came on Thursday, and of course, you know, we're talking, praying, and when they asked me, I told them what happened, and I totally lost it, so they gave me your phone number. That was on the following.
That's typical of that. Instead of them ministering to you directly, they go, oh my goodness, we don't know how to deal with it.
No, they...
Let's talk to the Pastor Kevin. This is too deep for us.
They did. They prayed for me, but I told them that I was looking for a church and for a pastor to talk to.
Okay.
So this was Saturday, and then they gave me your number, and I called you, and right away you told me to come in on Saturday.
Okay.
Yes.
I remember that conversation, and I remember it clear, because when you came in... there was deep, deep sadness within you.
Yes.
And do you remember what you were asking me? You were asking about how do I ever get joy again?
Yes.
Do you remember that? Yes. How do I ever feel again?
Yes.
How do I do this? And you were pissed off at God.
Yes, I was.
Which I totally understand. I mean... As a pastor, I remember telling you, there's nothing I can tell you that's going to comfort you.
Yes.
There's nothing I can say, because I've never went through your experience and stuff. But you were deeply seeking a relationship with God again.
Yes.
Because, tell us about that, because in a sense, you were pissed at God.
Yes, I was.
And tell us about that.
Because I couldn't understand how such a loving God would allow it. For my granddaughter to be taken that way. But he wasn't God.
Right.
He was this guy.
Yeah.
You know, but you always have to find somebody to blame.
Yeah.
I blame myself.
To this day?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
And it doesn't matter if anyone says that it's not your fault. In fact, you did everything you possibly could do, even meeting with the lawyers, and the lawyer telling you you're not going to do it, even calling Children's Services to try to protect it. But yet you still blame yourself.
Yes. I feel that day I lost my granddaughter and my daughter as well.
And it was your fault.
That's how I feel.
Okay. To this day?
I struggle with that. I try to forgive myself.
But it's hard.
It's hard.
Okay. And so you continue to come. And if you're listening to the podcast, because we're getting real deep, you're still struggling with this. I mean, this doesn't go away, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't go away. Because there was a time, and maybe I got this wrong, there's a time that you needed to step back from church for a while.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes, last year.
Last year, where I just didn't see you.
Yes.
And what was that about?
That was about me understanding, having a better relationship with God.
Okay.
I'm still working at it. I'm still not where I want to be. And I know that it's not my fault.
Right. In your head.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for God showing me which, you know, how to go, and I try to take care of myself, step back and absorb what I need to do, how to keep on moving forward and I'm more positive and try to... Because I was hurting so much, and I was tired of hurting.
Oh, yeah.
And I was talking to God, I want to stop hurting. I'm tired of hurting.
Yeah.
So that helped me start peeling
right.
a little bit of all that heartache and pain. So, that's what I need. I took, I think it was on and off maybe from January to like April.
Okay. Now, you did something very unique this year. Because we have a service at the end of November that honors All Saints Sunday.
Yes.
That honors the saints. And we have a grief class that you were part of that Justin leads and does a great job.
Yes.
But you made a conscious decision to stop.
Yes.
And tell us about that.
Yes. I decided that it was time for me to stop grieving.
Okay.
In moving forward, it's hard,
right.
moving forward, enjoying all the beautiful memories, and just not carrying all that extra heavy luggage that is so painful.
Yeah.
And because that's not where God wants me to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to I need to live life. Right. I need to have my joy back. I need to live my purpose.
Right. And having your joy back, I would assume, to release the shame and guilt.
Yes.
And that's, you know, we can say as pastors, you need to release the guilt. It's not your fault. But that's a hard thing to do.
Yes.
It's a hard thing to do because you, because knowing you, Isabel, you love very deeply, like yes. most people. And I don't think you'll ever get over this. I don't think anyone can get over the murder of their granddaughter or the incarceration of their daughter. And now let's wind it down. If your daughter was released,
yes.
When?
September 16,
2016. So she was incarcerated for how long?
For 5 years.
5 years, yes. Which is a long time. You yes. were visiting her on a weekly basis
yes.
and stuff like that. But what is your prayer for your daughter now? Because she's really struggling with
yes.
guilt, too. And
yes.
she's really struggling with shame. And she came to the church for a while.
Yes.
But just kind of disappeared a little. She calls me every once in a while.
Yes.
But she's going through tremendous amounts of guilt.
Yes.
And so what is your prayer for your daughter now?
My prayer is for God to help her heal.
Okay.
And for her to be able to forgive herself.
Okay.
And to let go of the guilt that she has and the shame.
Okay.
To not to feel as an outcast, because she feels that she's an outcast and she's not welcome or loved, especially within the family.
Okay, within your family.
Yes.
Because your family, she's right on that, because
yes.
your family is still blaming
has
her.
Has stepped back, yeah.
And stepped back.
Yes.
So, in fact, your family has pulled away from you as well.
Yes.
Because you love your daughter.
Yes.
So it's almost to the point where you're balancing yourself out, trying, how do I support my daughter? I support my daughter. I mean,
yes.
I love my daughter. I want my daughter to be healed, but yet I'm getting ostracized,
yes.
and she's getting ostracized by family members. So your dream. Let's go. And one thing I talk about is your greatest pain, which you have, huge pain, can be your greatest ministry.
Yes.
And so, in the process of healing, when you're becoming healed, what do you see in the future for a ministry that you would love to do?
I would love to start a nonprofit foundation for children, under, you know, to honor my granddaughter's memory.
Okay. When you were going to call it the Mia Moore Foundation.
Yes.
And that goal would be what?
To help children that are... hopefully not abuse, hopefully
yeah.
not get abused, and abuse children as
right.
well, but hopefully to stop
right.
to stop that vicious
right.
cycle of
right.
child abuse.
Okay. And one thing I've noticed about Isabel, because of what she's gone through, she can look at somebody and know they're being abused. You have that eye.
Yes.
That you just look at them and you go, that woman's being abused or that child's being abused, because you have this keen awareness right now. And you don't... I shouldn't say it that way. You don't worry about what people think about it. You say what you feel is going on, because you're very clear about protecting children, and that's your biggest
yes.
ministry and love
yes.
right now. So as we close, if somebody's listening to this and probably going, oh my goodness, Isabel, how in the world do you do it? Where in the world do you get your strength? How in the world do you breathe every day? How would you tell somebody to begin with a relationship with Christ, and knowing it's not there yet with you,
mm-hmm.
but how do you begin to even talk to Christ again, or how do you know, what advice would you give someone?
Well, even though my relationship with God is not there, I always know that He has always been there for me.
Okay.
I know... coming from God to me, I know He loves me. He's never left me. He's never forsaken me.
Right.
He's never left me alone. It's me that I need to learn to trust in Him more.
Yeah.
And to know that He has
right.
a purpose for me.
Yeah.
And He has a plan for me.
And it's hard to trust.
It is hard.
When you lose your daughter and you lose your granddaughter.
Yes.
And so that's hard to do.
Yes.
But you're saying that needs to be done.
Yes, and my strength comes from God. I can't tell you, but I know that the only one that has picked me up from bed every day and give me the strength to go forward. It has been from God.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Isabel. You did a great interview. And I'm holding back my emotions and trying to do this. But thank you for being authentic and thank you for being real. If Isabel spoke to you, please send an email to me and I can forward it to Isabel. Or if you have any encouragement or if you need some advice from Isabel. Isabel, you go to what, 9 o'clock or 10:45?
6.
Oh, you go on Saturday at 6 o'clock. So she goes at 6 o'clock service. So if you see Isabel, you know her story, give her a hug. She would love to talk to anybody about how to prevent child abuse and how to prevent domestic abuse, correct?
Yes.
And so thank you for listening to the podcast. We appreciate it. And remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely and join us for our next podcast. God bless. Did a great job. Thank you so much. How do you feel about it?